WFYI podcast brought to you by Bloomington, Indiana, an American college town offering food and drink, college sports, outdoor activities, live music, cool art, and good times daily. Everyone is welcome in Bloomington. More information at visitbloomington.com.
Back when my kids started school, if I'd asked members of the local school board what they thought about parties, their response might have been something along these lines. Well, I suppose they're okay as long as the room parents go easy on the sweets and accommodate students with peanut allergies. Or they might have expressed concern about raucous post-game celebrations or unsupervised after-prom activities. Oh, how times have changed. These days, with political and ideological tensions creeping or increasingly bursting into our schools, K through 12 education and the word party intersect at the ballot box. Hi, I'm John Schwannis, and on this week's show, we'll examine legislation that would require school board candidates to declare a partisan affiliation. Indiana lawmakers, from the State House to your house. Should Hoosiers seeking election to a local public school board be forced to run as Republicans, Democrats, or Independents, just as they would, say, if vying for governor, mayor, or county commissioner? Or should our state do everything possible to keep partisan politics out of our schools? Joining me to debate that question are Senator Jack Sandlin, an Indianapolis Republican, Senator Andrea Hunley, an Indianapolis Democrat, conservative political activist Micah Beckwith, pastor at Life Church Assembly of God in Noblesville, and Terry Spradlin, executive director of the Indiana School Boards Association, which represents the interests of nearly 1,700 school board members across the state's 290 school corporations. Thank you for being here. Promises to be a lively discussion. I'm buckled in. Jack Sandlin, let me start with you. You are the author of Senate Bill 188, which, first, tell us what, without filibustering for the whole 30 minutes here, what would Senate Bill 188 do?
Well, Senate Bill 188 would require persons that are running for a school board to designate their party, Republican, Democrat, or Independent, if they chose not to affiliate with the party. And there's also a couple of other pieces in there that deal with school board attendance or lack of attendance, and then a mechanism to remove a school board member that may move out of the district or out, even out of state.
And your bill has not, it's going to be up for another hearing perhaps next week. It already has been heard once. There was no vote, so we will be watching that. Hasn't moved yet, but there's a comparable bill that is similar in nature in the House that had this week moved out of committee on a 6-4 vote that, for those who really are following the minutia here, would allow, open the door to that through either a referendum or a petition process where schools, I guess, could theoretically elect whether to opt in or out of that kind of approach.
That's correct.
You're a teacher. You taught at Ben Davis. You've been a principal. You just wrapped up a 10-year run as a principal of a magnet school here in Indianapolis Public Schools. What's wrong with that idea?
Well, I'll tell you, I've had the pleasure to serve under in three different school districts, you know, under their school boards. And I'm glad that in no case did I know what their political affiliations were, because I think that we need to get politics as far away from our classrooms as possible, and that we need to ensure that our school boards are working collaboratively. And I think that this would just introduce opportunity for division that we really do not need in our schoolhouses or on our school boards.
And I presume that would go for either what we'll call Jack Sandlin's bill, Senate Bill 188, or perhaps some would say the less stringent House version, which again would allow districts, school corporations, school boards, or their constituents to essentially say yay or nay to
that
approach.
It's true. And what I appreciate about the House bill is that it does provide some opportunity for local control. But if you've gotten into the amendments and, you know, the way that it would work, it really does muddy the water. And I think it doesn't really create transparency for voters in the way that I think that, you know, some folks would like. So I'm not really sure the House bill's hitting the mark there either.
Oh, strike two. What's a nice pastor from Noblesville doing on this? You testified in committee last week when Senator Sandlin's bill was up. I'm sure you might make another state house appearance before all is said and done. What's the interest here?
Well, I hear from parents all the time, all over the state. And the one thing that they are more concerned with than anything else is the schools, because the schools have been politicized. It is, if anyone who says we want to keep politics out of schools is either not being honest or they're just not paying attention, because politics has seeped into schools. And there is a push to remove the conservative kind of ideology, the parents' rights from schools. I think a bill like this just gives more transparency to the voter to say, hey, who are you? What do you stand for? What's your worldview? I don't see it as a problem, because shouldn't we know more about the people that we're voting for? And this is just one more tool for that to happen.
Well, in the interest of transparency, what are some of the districts? Can you point to districts or schools, even specific schools, that have seen this embrace of a liberal ideology?
Oh, well, I'm in Hamilton County, and I think...
And you teach at a Christian school.
I do teach at Wisdom Builders schools. I did that last year. I'm not teaching there this year. But Hamilton County has Hamilton Southeastern, and I would say that's kind of ground zero for kind of this political indoctrination, this ideology that's kind of taken hold of our kids. And we're seeing the school board, up until this last election, was really pushing parents out. They weren't listening to parents. They weren't being transparent. And I think, again, this bill would just say, as parents go to the voting booth, who aligns with my worldview? And I think it's a good thing. We should know more about who we're voting for.
But again, this what you said, but shouldn't parents then be able to address their concerns by voting those people out of office?
I mean, absolutely. But the one thing that I hear often is, how do I find out information about who's running for school board? I can't find anything on this person. I know nothing about them. So they walk into the voting booth blind. And I would say 90% of the people, and I do voting guides for people all over the state, they always ask me, who do I vote for school board? I don't know anything about them. And so this would just be one more tool for voters to know a little bit more about who they're voting for.
Terry, as we mentioned, 290 school corporations. Right. How many do the daily Marx-Lenin pledge? Are you seeing evidence of this kind of ideological brainwashing that some of the supporters of this bill have alluded to?
You know, the backdrop to this is, just last week, the Department of Education came out with a Gallup poll that surveyed Hoosiers and 3, parents.
3,000 statistically valid, according to Gallup.
And 88% of parents said they're very satisfied with their schools for their children, and a few objected to the curriculum, but when they were asked what do they object about the curriculum, they really didn't know. So I think there's a high level of satisfaction with the system we have, and we'd want to maintain status quo. It's worked quite well for the state of Indiana for more than 70 years, this system of governance, and we are concerned that the change that Senator Sandlin's proposing would further divide our communities. And I think we could just look back to 2021, what injecting politics into the boardroom looks like. We had patrons, individuals, groups, or political organizations coming to board meetings with the intent to disrupt. You know, I think Mike has said about battlegrounds, making school board meetings the battlegrounds on social issues. That was very divisive.
Well, there have been death threats, maybe not in Indiana.
There were threats, acts of intimidation and harassment. I had board members getting flyers in their mailbox with masked gunmen in a picture saying, we know where you live. I had board members chased out to their cars by groups of people after board meetings. I had patrons disrupt board meetings. The board recessed, went into another room. They locked the door, and patrons were pounding on them to come out, and they commandeered the podium. That's not the kind of civility we want in our boardroom by injecting more politics.
How about that? I mean, you're a law and order guy. You spent your career in law enforcement. I mean, the notion of this unruly, sort of certainly uncivilized behavior is an issue. And then also, two-part, this Gallup survey. As Terry mentioned, I think it was single digits where people said, I don't like what's being taught, but only a smaller percentage, it might have been 2 or 4%, said they even knew what was being taught, which I thought was an interesting juxtaposition. But take those one at a time. First, the unruly. I mean, does that concern you?
I mean, I appreciate Mr. Bradlin, but I think a lot of that's exaggerated. I mean, I don't see that in Indiana. I see people... parents, and I've had many, many, and we'll talk about the Gallup poll. I mean, that's not reflective of the people that reach out to me, which is why I brought the bill. And I'm talking about people from all over the state that have talked about the fact that they feel that they don't have access. I'll give you an example. I had a new person in my community that went to a school board, and they talked about going in, they could sign up and have 3 minutes to speak about an item that's on the agenda. And then they go through and they conduct the business. There's almost no conversation or interaction between the school board members. It's like it's a predetermined process. I'm not saying that it is, but that was the observation. And so at the end of the meeting, each one of the school board members gets an opportunity to speak for a few minutes. And then the meeting is recessed. And people just do not believe that they're having the opportunity. They don't know their school board members. They don't know how to find information. The school district that I live in, I get very little information unless I seek it out.
Are you certain, though, that if you had it in your dream world, in your nirvana, you had arch conservatives across the table there at the board meetings, would they automatically be amenable to lengthy discourse from people they view as radical leftists?
I'm not looking for conservatives to fill the school boards. I think the school boards ought to represent the communities, but people have no idea who the people are that are running for school board.
Is that, I mean, do you agree with that?
Well, I agree that we want to make sure that our people on our school boards are representing the community. I think that's the key, but I think that the issue here, though, is that putting a letter D by my name doesn't let someone know about my ideologies or how I would, you know, support teachers or how I would do all of the things that are not that exciting on a school board. I mean, I have sat through countless school board meetings, and they're talking about things like transportation costs and referenda or technology. Like, these things are not Republican or Democrat ideologies. And so I'm not certain that putting a D or an R next to someone's name would let me know how great they're going to be at reading data, how strong they are going to be at applying their fiscal, you know, knowledge and their fiscal expertise to the school board. And so I think that it's really more about a person's experience and about their vision for children. And I think that we have to remember that at the end of the day, these people that we're voting into school boards are serving people who don't have the ability to vote, right? We're talking about children. And so I think that that we've got to make sure that we're protecting those kiddos and that we're getting the best candidates possible. And, you know, I'm here in Marion County, where we are a very strong, you know, left-leaning area. And my concern would be that if someone had an R next to their name, they wouldn't get voted into the school board. And it's important that we have a variety of perspectives. You know, I agree with Micah. We've got to have a variety of perspectives. And I worry that we would lessen that, and that we would lessen the diversity of thought on our school boards and our communities.
Jack and I remember when every office holder in Marion County was Republican. Next to Orange County, California, probably one of the most staunchly Republican counties ever. What should voters read into the R, the D, or the I? I mean, the author of the House bill, last year he introduced it. Didn't go anywhere, back this year, and that's the bill that we talked about getting out of committee on a 6-4 vote. But last year he raised some eyebrows when he said, not only can you maybe discern something about fiscal policy and so forth, but also these are not his exact words, mm-hmm. but moral compass or moral code was the rep. What does that mean?
I think it helps. I mean, I would respectfully disagree with.
Is which one's a good thing and which one's a bad
thing?
Well,
it's the starting point. I think that's what we have to remember. This does not tell you. There are a lot of Democrats in the Republican Party in Indiana right now. Okay, so we find it, and we call them, you know, lovingly, rhinos, right? Republican in name only is what the conservative mantra is for a Democrat kind of masquerading as a Republican. So you can't just know the entire worldview of somebody just because they have an R or D next to their name. But it is a starting point. It does say, hey, I adhere to these core values. There's a platform. The Republican Party has one. The Democrat Party has one. Libertarians have one. If you have one of those letters next to your name, you're saying, I generally align with this platform over there. So again, it's a starting point. I would never tell somebody just to go vote for a school board candidate that just because of the letter next to their name.
But didn't you just argue, though, the opposite when you said there are a lot of rhinos?
Yeah.
To use the term, but they would theoretically, if they voted in a couple Republican primaries, as the bill suggests, you'd have rhinos.
Exactly.
So what's the trans?
But now we have a standard we can hold them to. Say, hey, you said you were Republican. You said that you were fiscally conservative, but you're offering referendums to tax the community more. You're not spending our money wisely. We have a standard to hold them to. Right now, there's no standard. It's just, hey, this person's a great parent in the community. And that's awesome, but we don't know the standard that we can apply to their ideology.
I mean, should people read anything into these designate party designations, or does this just open up a real,
you know, it's just so misleading, just assuming by the label that we know what the person stands for. You know, I worked for the House Republican staff years ago, voted 36 straight primaries Republican, but someone assuming I'm going to vote with the party all the time in a boardroom would be wrong. I'm pro public education, I'm pro kids, and when I come to that board meeting, it's going to be all about kids and not about politics.
So yeah, I have voted, I'll use my example, I think since I turned 18, every general election. I've never once despite my advanced age, voting in a primary.
Wow.
For reasons that I don't want to take sides. Some journalists go back and forth. Some I choose not to ever vote in primaries. So I couldn't, under the law, run for school board if this law were enacted, because you have to have proof that you voted in the two most recent primaries in the party of your affiliation for which you're going to seek the nomination. Is that correct?
Well, you could also be an independent. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could be an independent on the ballot. I mean, so Republican, Democrat, independent. And if you've never voted in a Republican primary and you... Or Democrat primary, and you chose to run under one of those party designations, you can go to your county chairman and make that argument. He has the ability to sign off to allow you access to the ballot, and I think
doesn't that make it more political too, having the party boss kind of sign off on it?
Well, I think if you're going to argue that this brings politics to the school boards, politics are already in the school boards. I mean, at a very high level. In my opinion, the school board members, because they don't communicate with the community during school board elections, are the most undervoted election that we have in the state of Indiana. So why wouldn't we do everything to give voters more information to be able to open that communication up? And that's what we're talking about open communication, which would I think increase the number of people that are choosing to vote in the election. People want information to make good decisions, whether it's RD or independent. And that's what this bill does, is it gives them that opportunity.
And I see you didn't raise your hand, student, but I did see you leaning forward.
I'm ready.
So last week in his committee, or elections committee, your committee, they passed Senate Bill 177, which adds 60 days to the campaign window for school board members to campaign for voter education. So the filing window for the candidates moves from July to August to May to June. So that's additional time for voter education and for candidates to campaign on their issues, on their merits, their qualifications. We supported that bill. So you've addressed that in a way. But this issue that board members don't want to hear from the public is wrong. We have mandatory public comment at every board meeting. And, we conduct our board meetings much like senators and representatives conduct their committee meetings. We're not allowed to engage you in a committee meeting, ask you questions, or expect a response from you.
And that's why we have this show. So you can.
And so we follow the same procedures. But we listen to our constituents. We have mandatory public hearings on our state budget, on our school budgets, the superintendent's contract, the collective bargaining agreement, before we take action at a subsequent meeting. So public participation is highly valued. We want it, and it happens.
Well, this notion of transparency, several people have mentioned it, and I think we all would agree that the more information voters have,
the better.
But what prevents somebody right now from running and buying billboards and filling the airwaves with commercials, if he or she can afford it and wants to spend the money, saying, I am a Republican, I am a Democrat? Or what prevents a party from sending out a direct mail piece where this is our slate, essentially, and we also think these people, can't you already do that?
You can, and that's a good point, but it also allows people to hide under the guise of nonpartisanship. Like, what if your values don't really represent your community, and you know that, but you want to get on the school board? You're not going to come out openly. You're going to do everything you can to hide from the voters, and I've seen candidates who have done that, and I would ask this, too. Is this not a political office that we're voting for? I mean, we're saying keep politics out of the school. Well, this is a political process that we're going through to elect these representatives of our community. It is a political process by definition. Why we don't just assign, like we do to every other office. I mean, there's not another office in the state where we don't have Republican, Democrat, or independent, like we were talking about earlier. So I think to say it's not a political process is just, again, being disingenuous. It is a political process. So let's make it like all the other political offices that the coroner has to declare a party Republican or Democrat. If the coroner has to do that, how much more important is the school board position? I would say the school board position is far more important than the coroner. So again, it is a political process, and we're just advocating that it comes into alignment with all the other political offices.
But I think that the fact that a party label would be considered transparency really is kind of a red herring argument, because, you know, as we talk about and the party bosses being able to then dictate, you know, party platform, they're dictating which candidates will then be able to be on the ballot, whether or not they signify like that you've been a good Democrat or you've been a good Republican. And so I actually think that it creates less transparency because candidates are going to have to jump through additional hoops. But I think that one thing, though, that we're missing here is that we're all sitting around a table talking about school board elections. Like, this is exciting. It means that people care about school boards right now. It means that there is already interest, and that is without us having to assign party labels, right? That we are already seeing an uptick in the number of people who are voting for school boards. I mean, it has been traditionally an undervoted office, but we are already seeing this increase. And I think that right now, we're at one moment in history. You mentioned 70 years that we've been doing this. You know, we're at this one blip in time where we have seen this incredible politicization and kind of disparate, you know, arguments that are happening in our communities. And I think that we have to remember this is a moment in time, and I don't think that we should be looking for kind of a very permanent solution to what could be a temporary issue. And so we need to be really careful about that. And when we're creating legislation, we're doing it for generations. And so we've got to really think about the generational impact. And I just don't see this having a positive impact on our communities.
Senator Sandlin, what can we read into the fact that relatively few states have adopted essentially your approach, your recommended approach? I think four require it: Alabama, Louisiana, Connecticut, and Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
others have opted this.
Under Representative Prescott's bill, which gives community choices, I mean, we've seen others.
Five states,
Tennessee, I think, was the last state to come on and just held a school board election in the last election. And I haven't seen the actual numbers, but I'm told that increased the number of people that chose to participate in the elections. And I think that if we can inform the community, give people access to more information about the candidates. We had a school board election in our district in Perry Township. I knew one of the school board members because he actually came to me and asked me for help in sharing my experience on what he would do as far as communicating with the public and campaigning. And that's what political parties do, is they help support candidates that have an interest, you know, to learn about the political process they put on schools. I mean, when we have our state party convention, I mean, people run for delegates, you know, for the individual parties. They develop platforms. They share that with Republican voters, people that are interested in the process generally. And I think that school board candidates can do a better job of presenting themselves to the community if they identify their beliefs and where they go.
Terry Sperling, the sky's not going to fall if this bill were enacted, right? I mean, in Marion County, you get Democrats elected, surprise, surprise. Right, right. Pick your county. You'd have other counties more conservative. You would have. So what's the harm? What's the biggest fear?
I don't think much changes as far as who's elected, but just how business is conducted. You know, that inviting the political dynamics into the boardroom changes a lot versus putting kids first. Senator Hunley mentioned, will the board members be aligned to the party chair? Knowing and having to call, how do I vote tonight on the board agenda versus doing what's best for kids?
I guess theoretically, why stop with school boards? Because you also have superintendents. And there was a controversy down in Florida, Sarasota, where where there was this newly elected conservative school board that first act of business was to out guy who had been appointed during the pandemic.
Right.
They hadn't really had much of an opportunity.
Yeah.
What do you tell? How do you allay concerns? Or maybe that's not. Maybe that's more of a proud threat.
I think that is. I think in Florida, that was the will of the people. I mean, the superintendent is appointed by the board, who's elected by the people to oversee their schools.
Natural extension. Yeah. Should superintendents have to declare a party?
No,
and teachers.
No,
I mean,
no.
What's the difference there?
They're just appointed. I think they're appointed. We elect. This is the republic that we live in. We elect representatives to go in and then make the appointments, set the policies to oversee what our schools are gonna look like. And so I don't think it's a problem if a superintendent is outside the will of that district Well, who's going to fix it? It's going to be the people who elect the representatives at the school board level to change the superintendent.
Patronage will happen.
Principal gets the last word, but we're out of time, so it's got to be a very fast word.
Yeah. It's about children who cannot vote, and we need to remember that.
All right. I told you it'd be a lively discussion.
Great job,
yeah. I appreciate it. This is what it's all about, is discussing these issues, and it's great to have expertise that you all have and the passion you all bring to the table. Thank you again for being here for this discussion. Again, my guests have been Republican Senator Jack Sandlin of Indianapolis, Democratic Senator Andrea Hunley of Indianapolis, Pastor Micah Beckwith of Life Church Assembly of God in Noblesville, and Terry Spradlin, Executive Director of the Indiana School Boards Association. And time now for our weekly conversation with Indiana lawmakers, commentator Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, and his sister publication, Indiana Education Insight, both part of Hannah News Service. What are we to make of this discussion we just concluded?
Interesting topic, a lot of good points on both sides, and I think it's interesting when you look at some of the top people in state government today and our federal officers. Senator Mike Braun got his start as a school board member. Todd Houston, the Speaker of the House, his first elective office was the Hamilton Southeastern School Board.
I remember when he used to interrupt my grass cutting to come politic there when I was in Fishers.
And if we had partisan school board elections back then, you know, Mike Braun might not be a U.S. Senator today because he voted in Democratic primaries back in his Jasper days, he said, because everybody ran as a Democrat back in his hometown. There just weren't a whole lot of Republicans. So it's interesting to look back and think about what might have been if we had done this back then.
If we had this law in place, what do you think it would do to the ability to recruit candidates? Because apparently there are some seats that essentially are open now. There's a difficulty getting, especially in rural areas. And what will it do to the quality, do you think, of candidates, one way or the other?
Well, some people may not want to run under a party label. It may make it difficult to recruit people if they know that they have to be a Democrat or have to be a Republican. It may be difficult to get some members of school boards from state government, federal government, if their positions are funded by federal money, because they may run into Hatch Act problems and not be able to run.
That would prevent federal employees from under the Hatch Act.
And those who are working under certain federal grants and things like that at the state level and in certain state agencies, for example. We've got a number of state employees who do serve on school boards right now. And then if you know, you also have to look at some of the practical questions, like are we going to have primaries for school board members? Are we going to vote on those positions in May to determine the nominees
for
November?
And the House bill we talked about would do that.
Yeah, but there's nothing in the Senate bill, I believe, on that right now. So you see all kinds of different things. You know, if they do vote on them in the primaries, you know, that gives you a little bit more time to find out more about these people. But it also allows more time for the campaigns to take place and potentially brings in more outside money because you're looking at two elections instead of just one election. I think there are a lot of people that have expressed some concern about some of the outside money that came into the school board elections last November.
Crystal ball time. This is what you get paid for.
Oh.
I think you get paid. What do we see at the end? The House version, the Senate version, or no version?
I think that there's going to be some kind of combined version. It's going to be something that'll be hammered out in conference, but it's starting to look like this is a bill whose time has come, and only after one session and didn't even get voted on last year.
Well, we will watch. As always, Ed, thank you for your insight. See you next week. The state invests billions of dollars of Hoosiers tax money and pension funds. Should returns be the only factor, and can socially conscious funds be part of the portfolio? On the next Indiana Lawmakers. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwanis, and on behalf of commentator Ed Feigenbaum, WFYI Public Media, and Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, I thank you for joining us, and I invite you to visit WFYI.org for more State House news. Until next week, take care.